This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann at Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I am joined by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. It's very early in the morning where I am. Where are you?
I am in Vancouver in British Columbia, Canada, and it is not too early in the morning here, 9:30 yesterday morning.
And what are you doing in Vancouver?
Jack asked me if he could ride the A-line at Whistler, and then it turned out there was this thing called Summer Gravity Camp for mountain bikers, and so he's at camp at Whistler at the moment, and I'm hanging out with some friends in Vancouver and on our way to Whistler today.
Camp Gravity, that sounds like gravity is involved.
Yes, he will be doing enormous big jumps and hopefully landing on two wheels and not his knee, wrist or neck or head or other bits of himself that might break.
Has he been overseas before?
Nope, first time. Only my second time in my life.
How exciting.
Yeah, it's really neat. And I love Vancouver. I could live here. It is the most beautiful place, amazing public transport, really, really wonderful people, really warm and kind, and I love it here.
That sounds good. It's not warm here.
No, I heard that.
And who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce my friend AJ Fedorik, who I've known since Jack was a tiny baby when she came to stay with us in Whakatane in Aotearoa. AJ is a parks interpreter, but I always know her as a bat girl because all the time I've known her, she's been an advocate for and lover of bats, and that was her role, and still looks after bats as a volunteer.
That sounds fun. Welcome, AJ.
Kia ora. Oh, it's nice to be here.
We started this show in the midst of the first bubble lockdown, so we've been asking people all the time, how was your bubble life? I know it's really turned into history now, but how was your bubble life?
My bubble life was actually very good. I don't live sort of your average lifestyle, I guess. My life typically changes every few months. I move to either a slightly different location or a very different location. So I move across the country to where my parents are in Ottawa, Ontario, in the winters. I was very lucky. I was there when the lockdown, or as much as we had lockdowns in Canada, when things became very restricted, that's where I was. And so I was with my family, and it's quite common for me to one day be living one life, and then usually it involves some packing up, and then things drastically change for a few months. And so I don't think it affected me as badly maybe as many people, because it was just like, oh, okay, and now I do this, and I have all these projects that I can work on at home, and I'm hanging out with my mom, whom I love spending time with. So I managed to get some things done that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to get done. And then a couple of months in, I drove across Canada, the 4,300 kilometers that it takes to get back here to British Columbia, to this corner of British Columbia. And that was a bit more of an adventure because I'm usually visiting friends along the way, and it was a new bubble in my car where I didn't really see anyone along the way and just stayed in motels and drove a long way in a short period of time, not knowing if there were going to be bathrooms to use or but overall, yes, overall, my time in my bubble was just fine.
And presumably the parks were closed at the time. Is that the work you're doing at the time?
Yeah, so they did delay my my start date that year because they did close the parks initially for, I don't remember quite how long, a few weeks, maybe a little over a month. But then recognizing that people really needed outdoor spaces to go to where it was more safe for them to go out and do something. They reopened the parks, but there was such a great number of people that wanted to go. They did implement some restrictions on some of the more popular parks in this part of the province, since Vancouver is, and the surrounding area is, one of the largest population centers in Canada. I'm a little outside the big number of people here where my work is, but we still had to put some restrictions on. Certain park buildings stayed closed, and some of the parks had to introduce day use permits to make sure that they didn't get completely overrun during that time.
So I'll ask you after the first song what your work is and where it is, but let's have the first song. Great Big Sea, Ordinary Day. Why this one?
Well, Maura and I have been talking about Great Big Sea. They're one of my favorite bands from Newfoundland here in Canada. I love Celtic music. I didn't know that she had already been introduced to them. So we'd been talking about them the other day while we were listening to some other live Celtic music. And it has a very positive message, I think, this song. So It's an upbeat, uplifting thing. I'm not a morning person. I work with bats. Well, it's not that early here in Canada or in British Columbia anyway. It's still not that far into the morning for me. So this is a pick-me-up kind of song.
I've got a smile on my face and I've got four walls around me. Got the sun in the sky, all the water surround me. Oh, you know. Yeah, I win now, sometimes I lose. I've been battered, but I never bruise. It's not so bad. And I say, hey, 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 it's just an ordinary day. And it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, just got to say it's alright. Genie sings on the corner, what keeps her from dying? Let them say what they want, she won't stop trying. Oh, you know. She might stumble if they push her out. She might fall, but she'll never lie down. It's not so bad. And I say, hey, 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 it's just an ordinary day. And it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, you just got to say it's alright. It's alright, it's alright. There's always some sorrow, and it's a double-edged knife, but there's always tomorrow. You know, it's up to you now if you sink or swim. Just keep the faith that your ship will come in. It's not so bad. And
and I say, well, hey, it's just an ordinary day, and it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, you just got to say, I say, well, hey, it's just an ordinary day, and it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, you just got to say, it's all right. It's all right, it's all right.
We are now all thoroughly picked up. So park interpreter, what does a park interpreter do?
A park interpreter helps people who visit parks to make deeper connections with the land that they're visiting. And those are both connections with the natural world, as well as the human history and use of the land that has happened in the past and maybe still happening in the present, with a mind to deepen their experience while they're in the park, and also to promote park stewardship, and hopefully beyond just the parks, that when you go home, you are thinking more about how all of our spaces are connected and the importance of caring for this planet. Not just setting aside certain little pieces of it, which is important, but bringing that back to your home life as well.
What does it mean in practice?
In practice, it means that I spend time preparing presentations, usually for a few different target audiences. I do presentations that are aimed principally at kids sometimes, but a lot of times it's for families in general or park visitors more in general. Sometimes our target audience is actually those who maybe aren't as familiar with good ethical practices for camping and hiking. And so trying to connect with those folks. So there's both the formal programs that I do, which there's usually multiple of those in a week. And then also the informal, going out and walking through the campgrounds, talking to people who are hiking, reminding people of the rules, but also giving them context for why those rules exist, and answering people's questions, giving them suggestions for where they might like to go for a hike, given the things that they're interested in. So trying to facilitate that. Those good experiences in the park. So it can be quite varied, but it usually follows a bit of a pattern every week.
You made reference to the bigger goal is to help people to appreciate the reasons for looking after the wider planet, not just the parks. Is that explicit in what you do?
I would say yes. Giving people a take-home message, I think it gives more relevance to what you're speaking to them about at the time. Why is what we're talking about important in the context of this park that you're visiting? How is it important for this space and you connecting to this space? But they're not going to live. They're not as lucky as me. They don't get to live in that space. I often get to live in that space for several months every year. They're going to go home to somewhere else. And why is that still relevant to them? And how are they, when they're back in the city, how are they connected to what's happening in that park? And if you loved that park, then it's impacted by climate change. It's impacted by air pollution. So all of these greater environmental issues are impacting all spaces. And they're impacting your life at home as well. So trying to make those bridges with people, I would say yes, is a very key component of what we do.
And are you expected to know, and perhaps do you know, the names of every plant and every insect?
Oh my goodness, every insect. Well, nobody knows that because there's probably about 2/3 of them that science hasn't given a name yet. So someone out there knows probably most of the species of insects by some name, but there is no collective whole on definitely on insects. And I'm good with a few plants. I studied zoology, so I'm much better in the animal kingdom than the plant kingdom, to be honest.
My experience of doing botany in northern Canada was there was an awful lot of mosses.
Ooh. Yes. Yes, and you have to be very much a specialist. Oh, that's very cool that you did botany in northern Canada. How far north?
Just north of Thompson.
I have never been that far north. I have been just in Manitoba. I made it a couple hundred kilometers south of Thompson, is as far north as I've ever been in this country. Which it means I've only made it to about half the country.
So which park do you work in now so we can look it up?
My park is an interesting kind of, even for here and being so close to Vancouver, is a bit of a tucked away little gem. It is called Skagit Valley Provincial Park, and it connects along the international border with the United States with the North Cascades National Park Complex in Washington State. And we actually, along the border, have several connected parks and other protected areas right in that area in the Cascade Mountains of British Columbia and Washington. And so one of the things I spend a lot of time talking about is nature not recognizing the borders that we put up. So we say nature knows no borders, which isn't entirely true, but it doesn't know human borders, political boundaries. And it's very important to recognize that in doing conservation along the border and us connecting between the different park systems, both for the benefit of our human visitors, but very much for the ecology of the land that we're also mandated to protect.
And that's deliberate, is it? Those ecological corridors across those boundaries?
Sometimes, yes. I think some of them are a little bit more, that wasn't maybe the goal when they were created. In Skagit, the history of the creation of that park has to do with a hydroelectric reservoir that's on the U.S. side of the border and floods across into Canada that pre-existed the national park that is there. And the park kind of got created around it with a designated recreation area to accommodate the reservoir. But it also spurred on more protection on the BC side of the border as those things grew together, and a period of time where they were supposed to raise that dam and flood a lot more of this very wide glacial valley. And there was a whole bunch of people who, on both sides of the border, didn't think that was the way to go in the 1970s and protested. And during that protest movement is when the provincial, initially a recreation area on the BC side of the border, and then eventually in the 90s got upgraded to what we consider a Class A provincial park. So it got more protection as time went on. Basically, thanks to a group of citizens who stood up and said, we think this is an important location to protect. And that, so that connection, the North-South Valley connection with the U.S. and that corridor is in this case, part of what was important to protect.
But they managed to get away with flooding an area from the U.S. side.
Yes, and that had, the flooding initially happened in the 1950s. They started building that dam in the 1930s. The permission to flood across the border. We have lots of this that happens between Canada and the U.S. There are some reservoirs that flood the other direction from Canada into the U.S. So it's definitely not unique in that sense. And there is a governing body that manages those issues between Canada and the U.S. with some Canadian commissioners and some American commissioners who have to agree to things. And the original agreement for flooding this valley and flooding across the international border, the permission was given during World War II. So electricity was very important and for the war effort. So there, and environmental concerns were at a very different place in the early 1940s. So it was 1941, September 1941, when the hearing happened, and January 1942, when the decision was given to allow the original amount of flooding, the part that got protested, that was actually a scaling back from that original agreement. Canada had been in the war since the beginning, and the U.S., of course, entered in December of 41. So the context of what was happening in the world is this little valley that was tucked away that didn't have a road that went to it, politically wasn't a concern compared to the electricity that was needed from it.
And if we visit there, what do we see?
Admittedly, the reservoir is beautiful at full pool. It is, so it depends a little bit on the time of year when you get there. You might have this very large, beautiful lake. You are surrounded by fairly tall mountains. Some of the prominent ones we see 2,400 meters in the area. Usually still some snow, increasingly less snow many years. We're increasingly having less snow that lingers into the summer. I was shocked the other day to see just how little snow there is on some of those mountains for so early in the summer here. But we had unusually warm weather this spring, which of course will become not unusual. So you have these beautiful tall mountains, broad valley, very popular with people who like to fly fish. It has rainbow trout, which I know you're familiar with now in New Zealand, one of the places they're native to here, as well as several other species that people really like to fish for. There is a very long gravel road that leads out to the park, and because of that, for being so close to several million people, we are not that busy usually, not compared to any of the other parks that are in our region. So you don't have this sort of overcrowding. It's wonderful that people are getting out to enjoy parks, but you don't have as many two-legged creatures to run into. You will probably run into some bears. Saw a lovely bear the other day. Lots of deer, all kinds of birds. It's a very biodiverse place. It is right in the middle of the Cascade Mountains, between the very wet side where we're here in Vancouver. We are in temperate rainforest habitat. And over on the east side of the Cascade Mountains, we actually have some pockets of true desert, but otherwise desert and grassland. And my park sits directly in the middle of that, in the transition zone between the two. So you have species from the wet side, species from the dry side mixing there. And you have pockets of habitat that are very lush and look like the west side. And you can walk 100 meters and be in very dry eastern side habitat, which I think makes it just, a very, very special place. And part of the reason that people recognized that and tried to save it in the 70s, that it has such extremely high biodiversity, as well as being connected by this north-south corridor into Washington State that kind of pulls some species up. And then everything from very low valley to high elevation, bare peaks, and then all the wonderful subalpine vegetation that is up there. So I know I'm biased, but I think it's a very, very special place.
Bubble sprite of the forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi Orokanui, kia koutou, ko tahuahau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding very sustaining and illuminating for you more and more each day, who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very challenging. It's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the care, the compassion, the love that we also richly deserve and need in this process of recalibration and recovery that we're all moving through together. I know for myself, I'm really appreciating having a few days off after a very busy time with many, many events in the community. I'm very lucky, of course, to live here in Otipoti Stuneden, such a caring and creative community, always so many things happening. And over the last wee while, I have been emceeing the Midwinter Carnival, which of course celebrates this movement from darkness back to light as we move through the winter solstice. And also welcome Puaka Matariki in our skies. And it's been wonderful to be part of this celebration for the community, to acknowledge these rituals, these movements in time and space as we farewell the winter and look forward to the spring. It's a wonderful, wonderful time to gather together and to acknowledge all those skills, all those gifts that we have to share. And for the Midwinter Carnival, we had amazing dance and poetry and storytelling, aerial silks, beautiful music. I was able to play with my band, which was wonderful, and everybody really enjoyed dancing. It was very exciting. And we had a rainbow dance floor that lit up and changed colour throughout the evening in lots of different configurations, which was just mesmerising. And it was a great honour to be part of this acknowledgement of where we are as a species, that for hundreds of thousands of years we have celebrated these times of change together, and how wonderful that we can come together and do this again each year. It's a really, really precious part of who we are. So I've really enjoyed that, and I had a lovely time emceeing the Rasa fundraiser for these two beautiful girls who are 12 years old. They've won gold medals in the World Hip Hop Championships, and they're now, you know, fundraising to go to Portugal to represent Aotearoa on the world stage, which is really incredible. So I really hope for you, you're enjoying these moments yourselves in your communities, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you. There's always ways that we can connect and sustain one another, particularly in this time of technology and distance. And these moments of connection, these times of real life, real connection, are so precious. And when we can have them, when we can enjoy them and cultivate them in our lives, you know, so much becomes possible for us. I'm looking forward tomorrow to a magic school bus group coming to Otapenui. So it's a wonderful idea. Many of you, I'm sure, remember the magic school bus with Ms. Frizzell and, you know, taking her students on all these adventures. We have a real life magic school bus coming from the Otago Museum, bringing families to Otapenui, and we'll show them all around. And it will be wonderful. So I really hope you're enjoying these moments of imagination and creativity yourselves in your own life. And a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. I will talk to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We are talking with AJ Fedoric.
AJ, I think that the future relies on our children being engaged in the issues that they face going forward into their adult life. How do we get our kids to engage more in the natural world?
That is one of, I think, the principal questions of people who do work similar to me, obviously. I mean, I think the reality is children are engaged in the outdoor world if you give them that opportunity. I don't think that I've ever met at least a small child who hasn't already been drawn into the world of screens and the virtual world, who doesn't pay attention to the caterpillar that's walking by, or the sometimes the smallest things that we don't even notice as adults. And I think the biggest thing is to recognize that when they're little, and acknowledge that that's important, and encourage that. I have some friends that I originally met who live very near the park that I work at. I've known their kids since one was 3 and one was 1.5. Their parents they get them outside all the time. It's just a part of their family culture. And those kids are incredibly engaged in the world around them and in thinking about how to protect it, take care of it as a part of their world. They it's very important to them. They like to go out and enjoy it. But I think it's very easy to not find time for that. And for some people, it's not that easy maybe to find those large spaces. So trying to take advantage of whatever small space that you have. And for parents and teachers and the important adults in a child's life to also be engaged in it, to show that interest. You're engaged in it, and I approve of that. I let me explore it with you. I've had kids come to my programs now that I've seen, yeah, since they were toddlers, and now they have graduated and are in university, which is alarming about what it says about my age. But I feel so privileged to have been a figure who helped them to find that in their lives. And some of them have said, oh, I want to do something like you do when I grow up. I want to go into biology. I want to study. They enjoyed fishing. They want to go into fisheries. But not everybody has that in their lives, and screens are a very convenient way to pass the time and occupy people. There are, I think, some great use of screens that can be used as well to engage in the outdoor world. It's just the manner in which that's approached. So I think there's lots of opportunities for kids to be exposed to some really great, cool, amazing things that are in the world. Because really, there's no kind of creature that's ever been dreamed up that there isn't something weirder or cooler or more amazing that actually exists on our planet. So highlighting those and there's a lot of amazing, I think, nature programs out there that are doing a really good job of finding ways to reach out through other media. I'm unfortunately not a person who that's my strong suit. I do better at the one-on-one with people face-to-face, but I really give kudos to a lot of folks who are doing some really good work trying to find those things that draw kids in and will engage their attention if their main way that they connect with the world outside their own little home is through a screen. I think it's still very possible, but we need to be mindful about how we do it.
AJ, you have got an incredibly positive attitude in the face of all the reasons why it's really difficult to be positive. What drives that?
I guess the determination that there isn't, I don't like the alternative.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I struggle. I often struggle keeping that positive attitude. But it's not going to improve things to give up or say that there's nothing I can do. We only achieve things when we try to stay positive about them and move forward and try and bring some other folks along with us. And so I try to be determined that that's the course to take. And to be honest, that is not how I feel every day. But I try to get past that. And if I'm feeling that way, then sometimes speaking to one of my other friends who also has this passion in their lives and trying to get them to lift me up again and make me feel like we can do this and we just need to come together. Maybe listening to a few of the more prominent folks involved in environmental movement around the world. They often have some very inspiring things to say, and really collaborating with other people. I find such energy in that. And when I feel like there's a group of us who are working together, I think some of those down days are when I feel like I don't know what I'm doing and I'm alone. And so finding that collaboration in other people and just getting energy from them and from our group and feeling like we are having at least a small impact. And if we can all have a small impact, then we can move somewhere.
What do you say to kids who are concerned about climate change and who feel powerless in that?
I guess that's similar sort of things that I try to tell myself. There is a movement, and especially kids today who, I mean, in many ways, I feel terrible that they're growing up hearing about something as potentially life-changing and catastrophic as climate change sort of regularly in their lives. And I'm one of those people who's bringing it up. And sometimes I feel a great sense of guilt that I'm bringing this, speaking about this potential burden to them, but also that knowledge is power. Mm. And if you don't know about something, you can't change it. So stay positive, work with your peers, with the other youth, the people your age. It's your future, and don't let anyone take it away from you.
In your school system here in Canada, and I guess it's tricky because Canada is such a big thing to say, isn't
it?
So many systems.
Indeed, yes.
Is there a focus on environmental issues within the education system that you're aware of?
So I have more experience with, I guess, the schools locally here because I do go out and do school presentations. And yes, they do have a focus on it. I would say it probably varies between systems across the country, and it probably varies just from school to school as well. And like most, you know, any education system, what your teacher is engaged in, there's the curriculum that you follow, but then when a teacher is engaged in a certain topic, they're always going to share a little bit more of that. So I do think there's a lot of teachers that I've encountered who, I think especially working with elementary students, who they're thinking, you know, this is the future of the kids that they care for, who do have a great deal of concern for the environment that's being left for the kids. And so those kids, I think, are, you know, they're working on projects that might just be around their schoolyard, but they are trying to engage in thinking about their impacts and what they can do to improve the environment around them, which is fantastic. Mm. So this one, again, another one of my favorite Canadian Celtic artists. And this song is an ancient song. Well, going back, I actually don't know how long, but she finds some very old music to bring back to the forefront. And it has an environmental message that is coming to us from hundreds of years ago.
Jay, I have some questions to end the show, and not very much time, so we're going to have to wriggle. What okay. is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Oh my, not the biggest success I've had in the last couple of years. I don't know how to answer that. um, Because the park that I work at has had a lot of challenges in the last number of years, actually from mostly from incidents that are related to climate change. It was closed for a fire partway through the season in 2018. In 2019, they weren't successful in managing the hydroelectric reservoir to fill to its full extent. So we had dry lake bed for much of the summer, and that had to do, you know, there's multiple factors going into that, but one of the very big ones was drought in the spring, which is becoming more and more common, and COVID, of course, and the international boundary being closed was a big issue. And I'm currently not actually able to regularly go to my park because in November 2021, we had a massive atmospheric river event that caused tremendous amounts of flooding, landslides across this corner of British Columbia, and they're still fixing the road to the park. And I think maybe one of our greatest successes is that we have managed to keep this program running, and I am the one principally responsible for it in British Columbia. As the Canadian part of this is a joint program with the National Park in Washington State. And we have managed to continue to deliver programs in altered formats. Year after year, it seems like there's something else that's thrown at us. But we have managed to keep reaching out to the public and making their connection to the area and getting the message out about how important that area is, and again, those impacts that what we do in the city impacts what happens in the park.
Okay, 3 minutes for the rest of the five questions. What's your superpower?
What's my superpower? I should have an answer to this. I've been asked this before. My superpower is that I can stay up all night with no coffee or any other assistance to work on bats. It's a breeze for me. Just don't ask me to be up early in the morning.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Yes, I do. However, I work for the government, so there are limits to how that activism is expressed.
So what motivates you? What gets you up out of bed in the morning?
The wonderful people that I have in my life, I think, are what really gets me up in the morning. And just an excitement about the world around me. There's always something new and cool to see. So life is fun.
What's the biggest challenge you're looking forward to, or opportunity you're looking forward to over the next year or so?
I think on a personal level, I have some aging parents, and trying to make sure that I am there for them. I think that's one of the important challenges that I am looking forward to. They have given me a lot, and I wouldn't be where I am without them. And I want to make sure that I'm there for them as well when they need me. And then professionally, getting things reopened, hopefully having the road reopened to the park next summer so the public can get there again. And getting some, I hate to use the word normal, but trying to have things feel a little more normal again is definitely something I'm looking forward to and may continue to be a challenge.
Now, there's a whole nother hour's conversation about, are we ever going to get to a new normal? And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Oh, my advice, I guess, would be try and take a little moment every day in nature, even if that's just looking out the window and seeing a tree. Give your brain a moment to just sit with nature in some kind of a meditative state, even if it's only for a few moments. I think it's something that we all need, and we don't always remember to give ourselves those moments.
Thank you for that. Thank you very much. Moira,
AJ, I just want to say thank you very much for the commitment you've made to making our world a better place. We need more champions like you. Thank you for all your goodness. Kia ora.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure being here.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Life's good, I'm loving it, living it to the max. Despite the threat of bomb attacks and monetary collapse. And yes, perhaps I am naive, but I believe in what I do. Cause the world we may believe could be the world where dreams come true. So let's just do it, cause we're worth it, be inspired to start again. Cause the rules were only written with some paper and a pen. And not everything in black and white makes sense, my friend. So challenge everything, follow your own rules until the end. Cause life's good, and I mean the real thing. Not that bullshit, superficial image that you're given on your TV screen. Life's good, and I mean the real thing. Not that bullshit, superficial image that you're given on your TV screen. Life's good. Some things in life that money can't buy, some truth from which you can't hide. So obey your thirst for knowledge and expand your mind. Change your world and realign, cause understanding comes with time. And mankind needs to find a brand new paradigm before the world gets wrecked. But don't get upset, learn to treat it with respect. Cause it's without a doubt the best a man can get. And yes, I know that we've a way to go just yet. But impossible is nothing when there's nothing to correct. And life's good, and I mean the real thing. Not that bullshit, superficial image that you're given on your TV screen. Life's good, and I mean the real thing. Not that bullshit, superficial image that you're given on your TV screen. Life's good.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, Positive Conversations with People in Their Bubbles, Their Safe Spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens Team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pukenga. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. This is the Undercover Hippie.
Life's good, and I mean the real thing. Not that bullshit, superficial image that you're given on your TV screen. Life's good, and I mean the real thing.
And I have been joined from somewhere outside Vancouver in British Columbia by Moira Carantai and AJ Federick.
Life's good.
That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the
life's
show. Marty Wah.
Life's good.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.